He was in Atlanta for an evening Seminole supporters would like to forget. Next destination, Columbus. Follow along on Twitter, the handle at George Schroeder. Catch his work for USA Today, either by getting the paper itself online, usatoday.com. Mr. Schroeder, a good day to you, sir. How are things?
Things are good. How are you?
Great. Now, I always love to talk about the immediacy of college football. We talked last week. A bad start might not kill you, but it can put you in a hole. And, of course, any team losing a top-flight starting quarterback is going to be hurting. But so that game you were at kicked off at 8 o'clock Eastern. By about 10:10, the Florida State season seemed to be pretty much over as far as making the playoff. That about as harsh as it gets for a team and its fans game one?
Yeah, now listen, I mean, and the deal is, it's all about DeAndre Francois' patellar tendon, which he had surgery on, I think, yesterday, and his season is over. I mean, the quarterback goes down. That was the end. It wasn't that they lost 24-7 to Alabama in a game that turned on three critical special teams mistakes. Otherwise, they were evenly matched. And I do mean evenly matched. That you lose 24-7 on three special teams mistakes, and your quarterback doesn't get hurt, and you're sitting there and you feel like, okay, we can run the table, we can play with anybody. If we don't make those mistakes, we might have beaten Alabama, and why can't we see them again in the playoff? But now, to me, their ceiling is much different. I guess we probably should wait to see how James Blackman, the true freshman, been on campus since June, does. But you know, he's not DeAndre Francois. Look, Francois is not an elite quarterback, but he was solid. He made plays, and he was really tough, and was, you know, he was a really good leader, even just as a sophomore. And so, to me, I think you're right. I think that they walked away from the new stadium in Atlanta, thinking at least in terms of what we thought we could accomplish this season, that's no longer possible.
You know, I kind of forgot that was a new stadium. I know that you've gotten to sample, you know, one of the early times when you went to Jerry's World. So as far as bells and whistles and how cool of a place it was to work and watch a game, how was that new facility in Atlanta?
Well, it was really nice. I'm going to say that Jerry World was, that they're very similar. That was one of the things that everybody wanted to wanted to ask any of us that had been to both places while we were in Atlanta, especially people who are wanting you to say Mercedes-Benz Stadium is absolutely the best thing I've ever seen. Well,
right.
It's fantastic, okay? And it's, I believe, 9 years newer than Jerry World. But to me, it's a little bit of six of one, half dozen the other. They're both Taj Mahals to football, and they both have pieces that I like better than the other. I mean, I like the wraparound. You saw it on TV, the wraparound video board, the 360. So basically everybody has a video board. And I like the fact that your eyes aren't drawn to the video board the way they are in that giant thing in Jerry World, to where you're sometimes watching that rather than the action on the field because you can't help it. I like that. But on the other hand, I think some of the other things about Jerry World are better than Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And by the way, when it comes to needing to see a replay, I actually think Jerry World's better because the wraparound video boards are really cool. But they're just wraparound video boards. They're not the size of that thing. So I like them both a ton. And maybe this will, you know, maybe this won't make anybody happy. But I don't think I'd choose a favorite. I will say this one thing though: when the LA stadium gets built, it's very possible that we are looking at a situation where, you know, obviously the CFP, the College Football Playoff, won't say this ever, and they might occasionally bid a championship out somewhere else. But I think we'll end up with a situation where those three venues, more often than not, will rotate the championship and probably should, if the LA stadium is everything I think it's going to be.
Yeah, that looks like it's going to be off the charts, almost space age. Well, obviously, the Oregon game was happening the same time as the Alabama game, so I actually went back and watched the recording, and I was kind of focused on the Alabama defense. I mean, when you consider what they lost, the Nagurski winner on the line, the Butkus Award winner at linebacker, six total NFL draft picks, and aside from the only FSU TD drive, man, they look like they were in kind of lockdown mode. I get it's one game, but you get a different perspective seeing them in person. How impressive did they look?
Really impressive. Big, fast, and strong. Brand new nameplates on the back of new numbers or whatever, on the new numbers on the jerseys. But big, fast, and strong. Now, I will say this. Florida State does the kind of thing and plays the kind of way. And as much as I was touting Francois earlier, he's not the kind of quarterback who, you know, he's not Deshaun Watson. He's not the kind of quarterback who's going to slice you and dice you. And they play a lot of Alabama-style offensive football more than they play the kind of football that really has given Nick's teams fits over the years. They're going to play probably better offensive teams. That said, they're going to strangle most of the offenses they face. That's pretty clear, too. So it's not to say they won't have a game where they give up a ton of points because somebody's got a quarterback and a spread. I don't know that that's in the SEC unless maybe it's Auburn. But perhaps if and when Alabama gets to the playoffs, you know, they may face some of these teams with similar talent to Florida State and Alabama and yet a better, more dynamic offense than either Florida State or Alabama has.
All right, we're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. There was a lot of questions surrounding, you know, will Alabama's quarterback, Jalen Hurts, progress? You know, the fact that he took him 1 second from the national title. Some still said he could improve, whether it's accuracy. You wrote about it with the new coordinator and quarterback coach, Brian Daboll. And again, I get it's game one. How would you evaluate how he played and if you noticed any kind of upgrade?
I noticed really no upgrade. I mean, I thought he played solidly. He doesn't make mistakes, but look, the big question of the offseason was, can he pass? Will he improve in the pass game? And the answer, at least on Saturday night, was didn't really see much difference in him passing versus last season, especially late in the year. He looked tentative. He doesn't look like he can slice you and dice you. And, you know, is that a problem? Not against most of the teams they face, because against most teams they face, they'll be able to run the football, let their defense play really well, and eventually break a big play or two, whether it's in the pass game or the run game, and pull away from people. That's what they'll be able to do. They weren't able to do that against Florida State. They had one big pass play, but if it weren't for those three special teams plays, the offense really never got on track. So I'm as good as he is in terms of just a raw talent, and much kind of a trouble he can make with his legs, improvising and stuff, I'm not completely convinced Jalen Hurts is going to be the guy. I'm not going to say this year, but you know, they've got the kid from Hawaii that everybody says is Mariota-like. It wouldn't stun me if at some point he ended up with the job. And I'm not necessarily talking about this year, but I do think that you get to the playoff, kind of like what I was saying about Alabama's defense earlier, and that's where you're going to need to pass the ball because you're going to be going up against teams that can move the football and score on their end.
We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. Let's get to one of the great feel-good stories in sports. Jake Olsen, now a household name, the USC snapper who got to do it in a game against Western Michigan. You wrote about the opposing coach angle and how during game week the head coaches literally never talk to each other. But for those who missed out, please fill us in on the role that Western Michigan coach Tim Lester played. And with all that's happening, this is his first game leading that program, and how they kind of got together to do this.
Well, and that's exactly right. First of all, Clay Helton reached out on last Thursday, and so I asked Lester, and I thought I knew the answer. How often does that kind of thing happen? He basically said never.
Right.
I mean, even if you're buddies on game week, you're not talking and texting. You know, and there are a lot of buddies in the game. There's no indication those guys are.
Sure.
But you don't talk in text on game week, especially on Thursday. You're trying to beat these guys. So Clay Helton reached out to him. They talked on the phone, and he asked this question. You know, he kind of laid out the situation with Jake Olsen, you know, this blind young man who has been working out with the team, and, you know, would you consider doing this? And Tim Lester, it's how awkward is that conversation? You've got
right.
to say, if the game gets out of hand, which, you know, you're basically saying, if we start to blow you out. And if you're Western Michigan, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, my pride tells me I'm not going to countenance the idea that we're going to get blown out, and you're talking to me about this, right?
Sure.
So Tim Lester goes with that and says, yeah, that makes a ton of sense if that happens. And obviously I don't want it to happen, but if it happens, we'd love to help out. I mean, that's pretty big of you, right? And then Clay Helton says to him, thank you for doing that, but then here's my email address. Could I get you to put it in writing, basically? because the medical personnel at USC would not allow Jake Olsen into the game unless they knew the other coach was in on it and was going to keep his players from, you know, blocking or trying to block the field goal as or the PAT right. as they normally would. And so to me, it just sort of it was a really layered, awkward conversation, and kudos to both coaches, frankly.
No, it's an amazing, fascinating situation.
There's one more piece to it, too, that I thought was fascinating, too. So then Western Michigan goes in there and plays really well. And, you know, it's a tie game or whatever, you know, what, deep into the third quarter.
Yep.
So you're thinking you may come in and pull the upset. And the last thing you're thinking about is this deal you made, right? Because it's not going to apply. Because, you know, A, you're trying to win, so you're not thinking about it. And B, you know, if you did think about it for a fleeting moment, it's like, well, they're not going to blow us out, so we're not going to have to deal with that. Okay. And then all of a sudden, USC pulls away, and they get a pick six with 3 minutes left that puts them up 17 or 18 or whatever it was. And at that point, Clay Helton looks across the field and calls timeout, which is what he said he would do. And so you have to sort of go from, I think we're in this, I think we're going to win this, to, yeah, we're not going to win this. Let's do the right thing that I agreed to do. I mean, so to me, that even adds an extra layer to this. And I really thought Tim Lester, first of all, it's cool that Clay Helton would do it, but it's really cool that Tim Lester was cool with doing it.
No, it was amazing because there was 3:50 to go, and literally in game time, I think it was 30 seconds later, they have to make that decision because of that pick six. Just that's terrific stuff.
Right. And so he called his team together during that timeout, and basically at that point is when he explained to the guys on the field goal defense team, PAT defense team, that's when he explained to them, here's what we're going to do, and here's why.
Wow.
You know, so he didn't explain that to them, didn't even let them know about the possibility beforehand because, you know, you don't want them to think about the fact that you might get blown out. So just a tremendous story all around, I thought. It was really exciting to see. And, you know, it just transcends winning and losing.
Yeah, so uplifting. Couple of final thoughts for George Schroeder. You got Buckeye Sooners this week, the big national game on ESPN. I know how you're on board with Ohio State as legit.
Yep.
Their opening win against Indiana went from tight to over in about 6 game minutes. So I saw they allowed a bunch of passing yards, nothing on the ground. Consider it was game one on the road in conference. How would you rate that opening victory?
Well, they won by 28 points, right? 49-21.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good win on the road. By the way, Indiana's been a decent program over the last few years. Kevin Wilson,
yep.
who's now Ohio State's offensive coordinator, built them into a decent bowl team type program, which has not been their history. They've got a little bit of talent. And so to me, that's an impressive win. Sort of in the age of Twitter, if we're all watching that game on Thursday night, and since it was sort of the first game, we all were watching it, you're like, oh, my goodness, in real time on Twitter. But if you step back and you look back at it now, almost a week later, at the entirety of the game, you realize, okay, they played a good team, as you said, on the road, in the season opener, a conference opponent, kind of a snake pit type of game, and they, you know, manhandled them as the game went along. You know, it's hard to get all upset about them for being down at halftime or whatever it was, 14-13 or whatever the score was at halftime, when you realize what they did in the second half. That said, I do think this. I think Indiana's passing game is not as good as Oklahoma's passing game. Indiana's quarterback's not as good as Baker Mayfield. Now, they got a couple receivers in Indiana that may be better than what Oklahoma at least has that we know of because they're breaking in a new batch of receivers. But you're dealing with a much better offense overall with the same kinds of strengths in terms of the pass game. And so, to me, those young defensive backs who are very talented at OSU, but remember they lost 3 to the draft.
Right.
Those young DBs are going to get tested the same way, only much more severely, potentially this weekend. I still like Ohio State at home. I still like Ohio State for the overall talent edge. And I like Ohio State to get to the playoff. But you know, if Oklahoma goes in and plays really well and maybe pulls off a an upset, I don't know that it's going to be the most surprising thing.
Yeah, the two quarterbacks for Oklahoma last week, I get it was UTEP, who's become kind of a second division Conference USA team. But if you combine Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, they went 29 of 31, 478 yards and four TDs. So, yeah, I see that the odds makers, not that I pay attention, have this a 7-point favorite. But I think I'm kind of with you. This may be a different kind of challenge for Ohio State.
Well, I think it might be. Now, again, I picked Ohio State in our picks, and I think that's the right pick, and I think that's how it's going to come out. But you're right to bring up the fact that UTEP's not very good, because Oklahoma looked really good, but UTEP is terrible.
Right.
UTEP is terrible. Now, when Baker Mayfield goes 19-20, that's hard to do when you're playing against air. Right?
Yep.
So that's a pretty good day. But as inexperienced as Ohio State DBs are, for example, like I said a second ago, they're also a whole lot faster and more skilled and just better athletes than what UTEP trotted out there. So it'll be a different challenge for Baker Mayfield and the Sooners, no question about that. I just think you learned – I mean, I guess if you were an Oklahoma fan, you would say that was a really good outing. They played clean. They got out to a fast start. They – broke in new running backs and new receivers. The O-line looked as good as you thought it was going to be. But I think I learned a lot more about Ohio State in that game at Indiana than I think we really learned about Oklahoma.
I agree. I thought Ohio State revealed an on switch that most don't have. He is George Schroeder, usatoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. You travel safe to the Horseshoe, sir, and as always, look forward to chatting with you next week.
Same here. Hey, thank you.
All right, take it easy.